Hello, good evening, everybody. Thank you for listening to the KBOO Evening News. This is a new-ish segment.
We're just getting started here.
I am Sam Bowman.
I'm Jasmine Moneymaker.
And thank you so much for listening. So this is going to be a segment of the KBOO Evening News that'll be every week Tuesday at 5:30 so far, called Totality of Circumstances. And we'll be focusing on police reform, police doings, community reactions to the police, and activism to reform the Portland Police Bureau and statewide police bureaus and...
Yeah, and beyond.
And far beyond. And, well, thank you, Rachel. And so we are, as I said earlier, privately kind of moving into the house while the floorboards still haven't been put in yet, so sorry if this is a little bit of a ramshackle show. But we've got Liam on the controls, and hopefully we should be just fine. So we should start out by explaining the title of the show a little bit. Totality of circumstances is a legal term, and it's usually used, in this context anyway, when police use force and in the defense of police who use force. So it's usually the totality of circumstances that was...
That they were considering in that moment of fear that is the constitutional premise, the constitutional line for deadly force.
Yeah, and that's how they determine what a reasonable person would have thought on the scene. And what that means for all of us is that's why police are often acquitted of or not even indicted for force events. Because in the totality of circumstances that they were aware of in that very moment, it seemed reasonable to use force. We are trying to expand that term a little bit to include the actual totality of the actual circumstances, including what the person who force was used on was thinking, what happened afterwards, what the officer's history was. Anyway, that sort of thing.
So, well, I mean, as you might be gathering from this, it's a little bit ambitious.
Yeah.
And we might be a little bit nervous.
And we'll hash it out over the coming weeks.
But we've got plenty to talk about today.
Yeah, and
we're mostly focused in Portland.
Yeah, and with a lot of emphasis on the Portland Police Association, the city's police union, this week. So we're going to start out with a story. So the Oregonian and the Northwest Labor Press have recently reported that on January 8th, the Portland Police Association conducted a so-called raid on the union representing the city's 911 dispatchers and other emergency communications workers.
So BOEC is the City Bureau of Emergency Communications, and it has been represented by AFSCME, a public employee union, for decades. AFSCME Local 189 represents about 1,000 Portland employees, including BOEC's 106 dispatchers. And full disclosure, Sam over here is actually a member of a different AFSCME local.
Hello. And the PPA, the Police Association, on the other hand, is an independent union that currently represents over 900 Portland cops. And that number includes the 12 so-called Public Safety Support Specialists, or PS3s, hired by the Bureau last year. PS3s are not given guns, but they are armed with pepper spray and will respond to a variety of so-called low and medium priority calls, according to the Portland Mercury. The position is seen by many, including the mayor and the PPA, as a recruitment opportunity for the Bureau to fill regular sworn police jobs. The PPA pitched itself as better able to negotiate training and job requirements for those new Bureau employees.
The association's confidence in its role as the city's self-declared, quote, strongest public safety union, unquote, was apparent in the letter its members hand-delivered to BOEC dispatchers last month, which the Oregonian published. Union president and 20-year patrol officer Daryl Turner invokes the public safety mission of both dispatchers and police officers, saying, quote, we are all brothers and sisters and we should be in the same house, unquote.
The letter also emphasized the PPA's narrow mission compared with the broader national and state-level concerns of the major public sector unions. Turner said that with the association, quote, every penny of your union dues goes directly to advocacy and representation of your individual and collective needs, unquote.
For its part, Oregon's AFSCME Council 75 responded by saying it was, quote, disappointed in the PPA. A Council 75 rep told the Oregonian that AFSCME's message to Portland dispatchers is that the big national union is, quote, not afraid to throw that weight around, unquote. The Boak labor agreement with the city expires this summer, and contract negotiations involving AFSCME are already underway.
If the police union approves a constitution change at their February 12th general meeting, the dispatchers will be allowed to join. Then, according to Northwest Labor Press, if 30% of dispatchers sign cards signifying their willingness to change unions, the state's Employment Relations Board will hold an election among all of the dispatchers.
So far, it's unclear how many at Boak are actually interested in joining the PPA. One source of friction with the current union could be AFSCME's failure to win dispatchers a 10% raise during arbitration 3 years ago. The PPB, on the other hand, can boast winning a 22% starting pay raise for cops during collective bargaining in 2016.
And that was a part of a deal with the city that aimed to attract and retain more officers. As it happens, 911 dispatchers have also been grumbling about low staffing and morale. Or at least the city auditor and the city budget office and Boak's executive director have been grumbling about it for them, making staffing a top priority at Boak. And in an environment like that, a hefty pay raise might be an easier sell than normal.
As with the PPA's collective bargaining for cops, the leverage in the negotiations includes not just the physical and financial security of public safety workers, but the safety of the actual public, too. According to Boak Director Bob Causey's 2019 annual report, the national 911 standard is for 90% of calls to be answered within 10 seconds during peak hours. In December, Boak managed a shade over half that. 80% of calls were answered within 20 seconds. If that sounds bad, in June, Boak answered only 55% of calls within 20 seconds and just 8% within 10 seconds. If you've ever called 911 in a hurry, you probably don't need us to tell you that 10 seconds, let alone more than 20, is a long time to wait when you're afraid for your life or someone else's.
Few people have proven more capable of leveraging these sorts of public service failures into labor agreement wins than the PPA's lawyers, currently led by Portland attorney Anil Correa. According to a profile in the Portland Tribune, Correa's mentor Will Aitchison was a key player in the development of the independent police union model, as exemplified by the PPA, and emulated up and down the West Coast. The major advantage of these types of unions is that they are not saddled with the labor lawyers of big conglomerate unions, but have specialist police and public safety attorneys.
According to Kanil Aria and Will Aitchison, whose public safety labor group does the legal heavy lifting for the PPA and the statewide police advisory group, the Oregon Coalition of Police and Sheriffs, a.k.a. ORCOPS, which has a registered lobbyist in Salem, the president of ORCOPS is also the PPA's president, Daryl Turner, and both organizations operate out of the same unmarked building behind the Rite Aid on North Lombard. The PPA also operates its own political action committee, called Keep Portland Safe, which currently has a little under $60,000 to spend, according to the Oregon Secretary of State.
However, this independent, unaffiliated union model also enables those lawyers and city negotiators to enshrine controversial police practices in binding labor contracts. Those include the 48-hour rule, a notorious Portland practice fought for and won by Aitchison, which forbid internal investigators from questioning an officer who used deadly force for 2 full days after the event. That rule went out the window with the last round of collective bargaining, in exchange for the aforementioned 22% raise.
That is some bargaining power. Mm-hmm. Anyway, we'll continue to report on the PPA's raid on 911 dispatchers as it plays out over the coming months.
And PPA members will vote in February, on the 12th, actually, whether or not to allow the dispatchers in, all while bargaining continues between their current union local and the city.
And the police union itself will likely be embroiled in its own collective bargaining later this year. Their current agreement expires in June of 2020.
So a recent case involving the racist comments of a Portland police sergeant gives us a pretty good example of the sort of thing the police union's lawyers can accomplish. In 2017, 2 years ago next week, Sergeant Greg Lewis of the Portland Police reportedly made racist and violent statements at a roll call meeting. Those are the daily shift meetings where patrol officers and their supervisors discuss the day ahead, patrol assignments, ongoing issues, and so on. This was on February 12th of 2017, just 3 days after the fatal shooting of 17-year-old Quanis Hayes, which we'll talk about a little more later on. Suffice to say that the shooting was being widely reported on in the news media and was a topic of discussion at roll call, partly prompting Lewis to make his remarks, according to the complaints against him. Lewis was fired almost a year later, And now, last week, almost a year after that, the city council approved a settlement agreement between the city and Lewis's union representation. Lewis's firing has been rescinded, and he has been issued over $100,000 in back pay. Excuse me, they will be voting on it tomorrow, actually, but they did discuss it at council last week. The settlement stems from a grievance filed by the PPA shortly after Lewis was fired last year. The grievance claims that the firing was against the police labor contract, since Lewis had no prior records of making racist or violent statements. The city council approved the settlement on January 30th, fearing that the dispute would go to arbitration as stipulated in the labor agreement. The four senior commissioners, all white, voted to move ahead and vote for the settlement, reportedly as a way to make sure Lewis could never work for the city again. Portland's newest commissioner, Joanne Hardesty, however, voted against the settlement. I should correct myself here. They have not voted to approve it. They'll be doing that tomorrow. But they did vote to make it not an emergency measure, so that they didn't have to vote on it last week. And that was the only thing that convinced Hardesty to vote to move ahead with it. And what's more, since Lewis's remarks had not been released to the public, Hardesty read them aloud, what his fellow cops accused him of saying, making it a matter of public record. Here is Hardesty last Wednesday.
Commissioner Hardesty.
Thank you, Mayor. If you run into a drunk on the street who's white in a suit, let him go, because he'll probably sue you. If he's Latino, call chairs. If he's black, shoot him. That is what the officer said. That is why other officers turned him in. I am happy that those officers turned him in and that there was a process. I appreciate the fact that the mayor has taken emergency clause off, because I would not, under any circumstances, vote for this settlement. It is clear, as Commissioner Udaly said, that we have a broken system. This afternoon, I'm going to be reading a resolution for Black History. And if I cannot believe that this particular officer worked for 25 years for Portland Police Bureau and never uttered a racist thought before he was in this roll call. I just can't believe that. Anybody with common sense would not believe that. Therefore, it is absolutely critical that the next Portland Police Association contract talks include people like me, who've been around for a lot of contract talks, to make sure that the people of the city of Portland are well represented. If it was up to me, I say let's go to arbitration. Let's fight the good fight. Because even if we lose it, we send a very strong message that this is just not acceptable. And you don't get to sit in roll call and make racist comments and then get a payday on top of your city paid retirement. This is absolutely not acceptable. And this is not the first time we've seen this, but I certainly hope it's the last time.
So that was Commissioner Joanne Hardesty speaking last Wednesday about the settlement agreement between the city and fired Portland Police Sergeant Greg Lewis. They will be voting tomorrow on the agreement, and if it passes, which it probably will, Lewis's firing will be rescinded, and he will receive, as Hardesty mentioned, a little over $100,000 in back pay. And in return, we don't have to hire him back as a police sergeant. So let's be absolutely clear about what's happening here. Sergeant Lewis's remarks were reported to the Bureau's Internal Affairs Division by multiple police officers present at the roll call. IA followed up by interviewing even more officers who were there, many of whom recalled the statements, or at least that they were made. Lewis himself, according to his termination letter, admitted to saying essentially what he was accused of saying, though he did not find it to be as big a deal as the Bureau and his colleagues were making it out to be. He said it was a sarcastic joke. The complaint made its way through the Bureau's process, was heard before a police review board, one of whose members described it as, quote, egregious, abhorrent act, and eventually, Chief Danielle Outlaw and Mayor Wheeler terminated Lewis's employment with the city. This was not a case of civilians driving a hard-working cop out of a job because they just don't get the harsh realities of policing. this was the Bureau doing a fairly steady job of policing itself, albeit on a time frame that allowed Lewis to work on the street for a year after his comments were reported. Once the PPA filed its grievance on Lewis's behalf, City Attorney Mark Amberg pushed for the settlement, according to his testimony last week before counsel, because he felt that the city would lose in arbitration and have to not only give Lewis back pay, but also permit him to continue working for the city. All of the commissioners present last Wednesday expressed unhappiness with the settlement. Indeed, it appears the city is pushing legislation in Salem this year that would prevent arbitrators from overturning disciplinary decisions when the arbitrator agrees that the offense took place. Senate Bill 383 has a hearing in the State Senate Judiciary Committee next Tuesday at 8:15 in the morning, so stay tuned to this show and we'll talk about it a little bit. And there will be a second reading and vote on the settlement with Greg Lewis at tomorrow's City Council meeting. It is expected to pass.
And anybody who pays attention to policing in Portland or to the issues surrounding it is up foremost in their mind is this issue of accountability, which in this case of Greg Lewis has been really undermined by the PPA. But there are also some issues that have been deep-seated in sort of the Portland Police Bureau for decades around accountability. And an oversight group called COCAL recently released a new draft report dealing with police accountability at the PSEP meeting. And if all of those acronyms seem a little bit confusing if you haven't heard them before, don't worry. I recorded a long piece to explain it to you. Regular KABU listeners will be familiar with the settlement agreement between the City of Portland and the U.S. Department of Justice, but to summarize it very briefly, after sustained community pressure, the DOJ launched an investigation into racist policing in Portland. What they ultimately found was that Portland cops had a pattern and practice of using excessive force, particularly against Portlanders who were experiencing mental health crises. And in 2014, the city and the DOJ entered into a settlement agreement that stipulated a number of reforms that the city and the Bureau needed to complete in order to rectify the situation. So in the years since, a Chicago-based consulting firm, the Rosenbaum Group, has taken on the role of compliance officer and community liaison, referred to as COCAL, or COCL, and they've been monitoring the city's compliance with the agreement and compiling quarterly reports on their findings that are released to the public. They presented their most recent draft report last week at the January meeting of the Portland Committee on Community Engaged Policing, referred to by the unfortunate acronym PSEP. Also a child of the settlement agreement, PSEP is intended to function as a community oversight body or bridge between the Bureau and the community. So this is something like the 16th report that COCAL has authored. And this time they look specifically at officer accountability and community engagement, two topics of enormous interest to Portlanders. But the biggest takeaway from last week's town hall was the increasing disconnect between what COCAL considers success and what the community expects from the city and the police bureau. And this is Portlander James Posey speaking to that at Wednesday's meeting.
In real dialogue, there are some issues. And the issues is that, you know, everything's coming from you guys, as far as I'm concerned. And I know Sharon and other people on this committee are community representatives. But really, when I listen to your report, it seems as if everything is hunky-dory, and I don't know what we're doing here. We might as well get up and go home, because it seemed like everything's been covered. As far as I'm concerned, the report and the paragraphs are the floor, the bottom. We need much more. After years of racism and discrimination in this town, we need to raise the expectations way beyond the reports that you all are presenting here tonight.
Adding to this distrust is the perceived lack of rigor in COCAL's analysis and the perception that the Rosenbaum Group takes the PPB's word for things. An example of that from this report is data on demographics of traffic stops. COCAL accepted data provided by the PPB at face value and didn't audit or reanalyze the data themselves. And when asked by PSEP member Sam Sachs to clarify whether the data actually represented an improvement, Dr. Rosenbaum essentially said, I think so.
Thank you for that. The reason I ask is just looking at the quarter, October 31st, 2018, just kind of skimming through this, the rates of drivers stopped by PP officers citywide, 64% white, 17.6%. The next highest is Black or African American, 17.6%. pedestrians stopped 70% white, 19.7%. The next highest is Black or African American. And then looking at this, going back to this, which is all on the website here, going back to 2015, it's similar. The percentage is similar. So I think it would be good to have a clearer understanding if things have, you know, changed significantly from, I think, what Dan was touching on and what we discussed when the CPRC was in existence, that Black and brown people were pulled over four times more than white people and searched two times more than white people. So I just wanted to clarify, because it sounded like you said that things had gotten better from that point. And that doesn't seem to be the case, or is it?
I think it is the case, but I have not looked at what the previous reports were done before we started, and I'm only reading their report. We have not reanalyzed their data. So I think it would be useful to talk to the Bureau people that were involved in this. And I think that the previous assessment was probably based on a different data set, and I don't know what benchmarks they used to draw those conclusions on that earlier study. So it could be apples to oranges, but it might be a sign that there's really been significant improvement in Portland.
Thank you for that. Yeah, I think it'd be beneficial for PSEPT and for Portland Police and the community to have a clear understanding of where we are today as far as the stops of minorities in the city over the last, since the DOJ settlement was in place. Where are we at today? So I think it might be beneficial to get some clarity on that. Thank you.
Perhaps the biggest critique of Kochel's work is that it hasn't yielded any results, and that the problems the settlement agreement was meant to address persist in the city. This is Dan Handelman of Portland Cop Watch talking about that during the community listening session and responded to by Dr. Dennis Rosenbaum.
COCL team has been on this for 5 years, and I think they still don't quite understand that the basis of all this is the power dynamic between the police and the community, and the police have a lot of power over the community. And there's constant rating of the achievements that have been done that are way too generous for what we actually see in terms of changes going on the streets. There have been 7 uses of deadly force between September and January. Several of them were people with mental illness who died. And that's what the whole agreement is supposed to be about, reducing the amount of force used. There were fewer deadly force incidents last time I talked to you. There were 2 more so far this month. That is more, the 7 that happened in the last 4 months is more than happened in the entire, any single entire year since 2006 when James Chassie was killed.
With regard to force incidents and the severity of those incidents going up or down, we do appreciate how serious that is, and we do look at force trends. I think that in the end, though, it's important to know that our job is really to address the paragraphs of the settlement agreement and see to what extent the Bureau and the city have put in place processes that are responsive to that. Mm-hmm. And we've given them hell over 4 years, frankly, and there's been a lot of very intense meetings where we've all tried to keep our cool. But we, in the final analysis, that's why we have groups like this in Portland, which is wonderful, to carry on this mission over time. So I'm not going to say more about that.
So the deadly force incidents that Mr. Handelman referred to were Patrick Kimmons, Samuel Rice, Jason Hansen, Ryan Beasley, Richard Berry, Anita Ruiz, and Andre Gladden. Mr. Rice and Mr. Gladden were both obviously experiencing mental health crises when they were shot and killed by Portland police officers. And Mr. Rosenbaum's assertion that his role in changing that picture is minimal and that the work must now be done by groups like the PSEP is not especially encouraging. For starters, PSEP is the second iteration of this community oversight body. The first group formed following the settlement agreement was the Community Oversight Advisory Board, or COAB. That group ultimately disintegrated in 2016 for reasons that while somewhat disputed, can largely be pinned down to an inability to retain qualified members and a lack of meaningful support from the city. And still very much in its infancy, the PSEP appears to be suffering from similar ailments. In its first 3 months, the group has already lost three of its inaugural members, and the new members who have taken their places come from a dwindling pool of alternates. The facilitator, who was hired to train the group, quit amid allegations of a racially hostile work environment and has not been replaced. And the city has yet to designate a full-time, permanent liaison between the PSEP and the mayor's office. So I think it's fair to say that PSEP is made up of individuals who are truly, truly invested in improving relationships between Portlanders and the cops who police them. But the dedicated community activists who have been working for decades to bring about change in Portland policing could be forgiven for seeing more than a little naivete in their earnest optimism.
Yeah, Mike Schumann, Portland Cop Watch. I just have a short thing to say to PSEP. Your job over here is to have something change in the police department. And what needs to be changed is a couple of things. One is there's a minority of police officers that act in a racial manner towards minority people. And they need to be disciplined, and some of them need to be kicked off the force. No one talks about that. Rosenbaum isn't going to do anything about that. They have all these processes set up, but what is the result? A person in a mental health crisis was killed by the police. How long ago? A couple weeks at the most. If you're doing your job over here, you need to start getting to the heart of this. You need to get police officers so that the first thing they want to do is not to shoot somebody, which is what they do now, because officer safety, we might be in danger, but to start dealing with those situations. And if that's, nothing has changed in the 5 years that Rosenbaum's been here and for the 30 years that I've been just closely watching the police department. If you're going to do your job, you need to change what's happening in the department. And all these studies are great, but nothing ever changes.
Okay, so deserved as it may be, that was a pretty pessimistic note to end on. So I want to make sure to mention that the PSEP continues to try to build a meaningful community oversight body, and they continue to seek community involvement and engagement in that process. PSEP meetings are generally held at the end of the month and are open to the public. The next meeting is scheduled for February 26th. You can find the deadlines online at portlandoregon.gov/PSEP. And if you'd like to read the Kokel report, dry as it is, you can find it at portlandcocl.com/reports. And they are accepting public comment on the report until February 15th.
And that's PSEP, PCCEP. Thank you, everybody, for listening this week to Totality of Circumstances. We'll be back again next week at 5:30 with more police reporting and police-related stories, and hopefully some reform-related stories as well. Thank you, Jasmine.
Thanks,
I'm
Sam.
I'm Sam. That's Jasmine. Thank you to Liam Delta on the turntables over there and MF Doom for the intro music. And we'll see you at 5:30 next week. You can email us at totalityradio@gmail.com. That's Totality Radio. And you are listening to KBOO Portland, your one, your only community radio station. Goodbye.
Night, everybody.